Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to TMZ Live. Harvey Levin here.
And Babcock here.
So Britney Spears is doing anything but well. We are told, and this is on, we have unimpeachable sources on this, and it's very sad. She is completely dysfunctional. She is having radical mood swings. This is a situation where there are people around her, and there aren't that many left because she is pretty much isolated, who are saying she was doing way better in the conservatorship than she is doing now.
Wow.
And there is no structure in her life. There is no supervision in her life. And one of the problems that she's having that is really dire is that she is going broke. She is spending so much money right now because she doesn't understand finances. And it's no shade on Britney. And this doesn't even have to do with a mental illness.
Right.
She's just never had to manage money. She is going to French Polynesia at the Brando, and we're told she's dropping as much as $1 million each trip, and
right.
She's going
every one or two months. Right.
Dropping $350,000 a pop, going to Hawaii on private
jets. Now, she had about $60 million, Harv, when she got out of the conservatorship, but that, hey, $4 million to the attorney, Matt Rosengart, $2 million for her dad's legal bills, and you're eating into that stack of cash pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, she has paid millions and millions of dollars in legal fees, and there is not nearly the money coming in that's going out. And there's nobody managing this anymore. She is left to her own devices. And I got to tell you, a lot of people I know who were kind of involved in this anticipated it. Because what Britney has just doesn't go away. And it may be that the casting was wrong in the conservatorship, but the necessity for one, a lot of people now are saying, really is something that is undeniable. And I will say that in terms of this thing with Jamie Spears, we broke the story on Friday that she is settled with her father. And I'm not even sure the word settled is right, because remember when the conservatorship ended, her lawyer, Matt Rosengart, was saying that Jamie had engaged in a bunch of financial misdeeds, they were going after him. When the dust settled, she didn't get a penny from Jamie, and she ended up having to pay Jamie's $2 million legal bills.
Right, and they had to sign to pay $1 million back the other way.
Right, so the situation is terrible for her right now. She is isolated, nobody's around, almost no one is around her. So, you know, what is wrong here, and how can it be corrected, and were mistakes made in letting her out of this conservatorship? Those are some of the questions. Our friend Dr. Charles Sofi is a psychiatrist, a well-known psychiatrist. He has treated lots and lots of people with the problems that Britney has, and he is joining us again right now. Dr. Sofi, welcome back to TMZ Live.
Thank you. How are you?
We're good. What say you about what we're hearing now about Britney? Does this surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, because the conservatorship was there for a reason. And even though, like you said, it might not have been, you know, with the right person, the actual process needs to be in place. Because when you have a mental illness to this degree, you need that kind of structure, supervision, and most importantly, to take your medication. And I think that's probably what's happened here. This is a no medication situation.
Why do you say that?
Well, because of the erratic behavior, the manic-y spending of money, recklessness, destroying people around her. No one feels safe around her. No one can control her. She's out of control on many levels.
Doctor, so what is the answer then? How do you treat a patient that has those sort of issues?
Well, these kinds of situations run into a wall eventually. Either she'll hurt herself, she might hurt someone else, or she could be 5150 because she's not being able to take care of herself. And any of those situations will push her to a place where then medication can be given to her against her will. And that's either an injection of medicine or pills or whatever, and then hospitalization.
So let's get into what you just said, the 5150, which is an involuntary psychiatric hold, usually lasting 72 hours. It can be extended, but not indefinitely. She was under one before the conservatorship started. In fact, it happened twice before the conservatorship started. But a 5150, doctor, is very temporary. And you tell me if I'm wrong here. I don't see a world in which a judge would put Brittany under another conservatorship because of the public outcry there was in the first case, whether it was misplaced or not. I just don't see that happening.
Well, I understand that. But at the end of the day, hopefully a judge would make the decision in the best interest of that patient. And if that's what she requires, even for a temporary amount of time, that's what she would require. But a 5150, like you said, could be extended, because when she goes to a hospital and gets meds, she's not going to reconstitute and pull together within 72 hours. So it'll probably be extended, and then that could lead into a temporary or a permanent conservatorship till she gets more stable.
You've seen so many of these, though. I mean, you know what the temperature was with Brittany at the end, you know, where, you know, the Free Brittany movement and all. Do you see that as a real possibility at this point?
I think it's inevitable, because she's going to hit a wall, and no one, no matter whether it's free or not, to see her hurt herself or end up dead. And if that's what it's going to take to get her stable, that's what we should all support.
Doctor, is there any argument that could even be made that getting out from under the conservatorship was a horrible thing for Britney Spears, as we sit back and now obviously have watched what's happened?
Absolutely. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but look at it. She slowly is unraveling, and it was in place, and she wasn't unraveling. She might not have been happy, but she was stable.
That's very interesting. Happy versus stable, balancing the two. You know, the people we talked to said that they had actually given her a lot of freedom, but that freedom had its limitations, specifically because, you know, they needed to protect her. They needed guardrails. So they gave her as much freedom as they could, but still had restrictions. So that happy versus stable is tricky, right?
Yes. And that's maybe comes down to something as simple as the titration of the medication dosages. Because if she's not on enough medicine, she's going to want to constantly be happier than maybe she should be. And if the medicine is dosed properly, then she'll, you know, the guardrails are there, but she's not so out of control. So maybe it was an issue of that back then. But she does need to be stabilized before she hurts herself.
Doc, what would you do if you were taking care of Britney Spears? What would be the first thing you'd do today to get her help?
Medication. Put it in her. If she doesn't want to take it, I would inject it in her.
Wow. You were quick to answer that. There's no question in your mind.
No, she needs medication. She's out of control.
Wow. Dr. Sophie, we appreciate having you on. This is
Absolutely. This
is one of those things where, I don't know, you kind of wish for a happy ending here, but it's feeling very ominous.
But we see how devastating mental illness can be to anybody.
Yeah. Yep. Doctor, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Wow. Okay, we are going to radically pivot to Las Vegas. And that is the place where Taylor and Travis spent a weekend, first at a charity event together.
Patrick Mahomes, his quarterback's charity event.
At Patrick's charity event, hanging with Brittany and Patrick.
Yeah, look at them.
They are fully in love, the two of them. However, apparently Taylor wanted to call in a night and Travis did not. And he ended up going out and having fun until I think 3 a.m. But let's get to the charity event for a second. So they had a silent auction.
Right.
Well, they had an auction there,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, auction.
And so the question is, what could Travis auction off that?
Football, jersey.
A jersey maybe?
Yeah.
Something that would fetch a bunch of cash.
Are you saying something to Taylor Swift?
Watch.
I was just talking to my significant other, and we might have one other auction item that wasn't on the docket.
$5,000 increments, and we're starting with me at $5,000.
So the four tickets you guys were given away for $80,000.
Wow.
Unclear who got them, but yeah, Taylor Swift decided. It was last minute, clearly, because as you saw in the video, they didn't have any docket. They didn't have any like presentation behind them to say like, hey, these are the tickets we're giving away. So it was a spontaneous type of thing. And of course, Taylor Swift in the room, she's a giver. So she decided, you know what? What better way to support my friends, Brittany and Patrick Mahomes, my significant other, Travis Kelce, and their charity.
So they at least throw in some bracelets?
Those you make your own, Harvey. People make their own.
Oh, is that
how it works? God.
Yes. You know what? This is one of the first times. Look, we've seen them out together, but they don't really go to events together. Like, they said no to the Met Gala. They don't do this sort of thing. The biggest event
But it was Patrick Mahomes.
They had to be there for Patrick Mahomes. They are, Taylor and Brittany have hit it off so well, but you don't really see them out together.
I think it was interesting that he called her my significant other.
I agree. Not girlfriend.
No, that's interesting.
That's more serious.
Yep. We have a documentary that dropped yesterday on Tubi about Diddy.
Yep.
About all the things that he's facing right now. From the federal investigation over sex trafficking, guns, and to the civil lawsuits that have all sorts of allegations in them. But we talk to people who you may not have heard, at least in this light. You saw right there, you saw Aubrey O'Day from Danity Kane, who Diddy fired in making the band.
Yeah.
And she has been kind of a lone voice in all of this. She really opened up about some interesting things, which we're going to talk about. Stevie J, who's a big supporter of Diddy's, also talks to us. He was actually there during the raid.
Yeah.
I actually want to start with Suge Knight, because I interviewed Suge. He is in prison right now. Serving time. Remember, he ran somebody over and killed him in a parking lot in Los Angeles, serving time for that.
Yep.
And Suge is the nemesis of Diddy.
Death Row and Bad Boy in the 90s. I mean, heated rivalry. People getting hurt, Harvey.
People getting killed.
Yeah.
And you would think that Suge Knight would be joyful about what is going on with Diddy right now.
Absolutely.
Check this out.
First thing came to my mind was, you have your sons, you have your daughters. My reaction was first about the kids. And the thing is, I feel it's a bad day for hip-hop, bad day for the culture, because it makes us all look bad. I'm not the type of guy to cheer for people's downfall. And if somebody get killed or something happens to them, I'm not going to pop champagne bottles. And if I have a problem with Puffy, that's for him and I to sit down in the room and resolve it. So for the tragedy on both sides, the victim to him, that's definitely got nothing to cheer about.
That is pretty shocking.
That's the last way I would have expected him to answer that question.
I did not expect that at all. And that was kind of his tone during the interview. Aubrey O'Day is really interesting. Aubrey O'Day, who has talked about, her feelings toward Diddy, opened up about some things. I don't know if you remember, we covered this story when Diddy, a few months before Cassie's allegations came out, that he was giving publishing rights back to many of his artists.
Right. He was celebrated at the time. This is a great thing Diddy's doing.
By us, too.
I mean, how could you ever know at that time?
So people thought, this is a great thing. It kind of is, in the wake of what Taylor Swift had done to get her masters back, or to at least re-record her masters. So Aubrey O'Day schooled us and a lot of other people saying that was not the motive.
I received the publishing deal. I know what it says. I know how much money it was giving me. I'll tell you, $3.30. $300.30 for a full release of all claims against Diddy and many other players.
At this point in time, what do you think his motivation was there?
I think you would probably be making moves to keep as many people quiet as possible. It asked me to not be able to have access to my story and my experience anymore. It asked me specifically to stay silent and never speak poorly about a human. So then I realized something really bad is coming.
really puts a very different spin on the stories that we had told and been told about Diddy giving his music rights to his artists. And turns out, obviously, in Aubrey O'Day's part, very little bit of money. But irrespective of that, what it seems that the motivation for Diddy may very well have been to get all of these individuals to sign NDAs. And that's what Aubrey O'Day is complaining about, that she wouldn't be able to tell her story had she signed under this agreement, because it would have restricted anything that she could have said about Diddy and others that were involved in his orbit. And it just tells paints a very different picture of what was being done back then.
Talk about diabolical if that actually was Diddy's plan, and to disguise it, you know, that I'm doing something great for my artist.
Well, he went on television and people were talking to him saying, you are a great human for doing this.
Right. And if the plan actually was to get them to sign a non-disclosure agreement so they couldn't tell about their experiences with the guy instead. Wow, Harvey.
It seems like this was kind of aligned with the fight that he was having with Cassie, where she was saying, you know, I'm going to file a lawsuit unless, and this is right around the same time that he gave all these rights.
It sounds like he saw the writing on the wall, lawsuit's coming, and I'm going to try and get ahead of this and stop it.
Now, we should keep in mind that NDAs are ubiquitous in music, right? Everybody signs them in Hollywood generally. Lots of NDAs thrown around. Everybody wants to keep people silent. But it does, the timing with the problems he was having with Cassie just make it seem like, and we'll see at the end of the day, make it seem like he was doing this to silence his critics and those people who had complaints.
And Jason, real quickly, I think we need to just address this. Just because the feds got a search warrant doesn't mean they're going to file charges. Because to file charges, they not only have to prove in the case of sex trafficking that he brought people across state lines for sexual purposes, but there has to be some element of force or coercion or threats or something, that it's not just pure free will. And to connect all those dots and prove it beyond a reasonable doubt is a tall order, and the feds aren't going to file anything unless they believe they can win a conviction.
Hi, I'm John Joseph from West Hollywood, and I think that Aubrey O'Day's integrity has been questioned from day one, but she's been very smart about all of this since day one, and I just hope that none of those other artists from Bad Boy signed that NDA, because if he truly cared about them, they would have had their publishing when the music was relevant and it was making them actual money.
Yeah, we don't know how many signed or didn't sign. We just know she didn't. Okay, we're moving on to Justin Bieber, speaking of artists. He posted these kind of bizarre pictures over the weekend. Pictures that look like he's crying.
Yeah. Why is the question?
Yeah.
What's going on?
And the question is that performative? Are those real tears? We had in our morning meeting today, there were some people who thought maybe this is somebody that's not really crying, but they put eye drops on or something. But others thought, no, this is real. I don't know, but it certainly projects an image of somebody who's almost tormented.
Well, it's interesting because he uploaded a gallery of photos, and in that gallery, there were like performance photos, there was a photo of marijuana, and then the next slide was two photos of him looking emotional with like tears coming down his face. So obviously everybody in the comments was like, are you okay? What's going on? Like a lot of concern. And his wife Haley actually commented on his post saying, a pretty crier, with the emoji where it's smiling, but like a tear is coming down its face.
What do you think that means?
I think it's showing that it's not serious, but I do think it's also acknowledging that it was tears. It wasn't that it was just like eye drops from, because the reason why people think it might be eye drops is because the photo right before was of marijuana. So people thought, oh, he's put in eye drops because he was just smoking. But with Haley saying, you're such a cute crier, now that kind of confirms he was in fact crying. He was emotional over something, but he never addressed in his caption what exactly was going on, and who knows if he actually will, but a lot of people are concerned.
Yeah, and you know, a lot, he's been going through it as well. I mean, he's had struggles himself over years now.
Right.
Over years.
Health struggles, yeah, absolutely.
But also just mental health struggles.
Right.
Remember, he canceled a tour in the middle of the tour. So he's been kind of through it. And, you know, part of it, I'm sure, is just when you become this famous at that age, it's tough.
Hey, it's Bianca from Rochester, New York. I think these photos add a sense of normalcy to Justin. On top of the photos of him crying, he shared a lot of him smiling and having a good time. I think he's showing that even though you have it all, you can still have low points. And I think Haley's comment was a way to tell fans Justin's okay.
Yeah.
It shows him in a vulnerable state, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Hope he's okay.
So the White House Correspondents' Dinner went down over the weekend, Saturday night. Splashy event. The president spoke. Colin Jost, it was hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really all about Scarlett Johansson. I mean, it was really, really funny. He was saying, everybody come up and take a picture with Scarlett. And she's sitting there saying, oh, my God.
It was fun.
It was really fun. Outside, there was a big protest by a lot of pro-Palestinian demonstrators that made it difficult for some of them to get inside. And one of the people who was a guest at the dinner was Caitlyn Jenner. And she decided she would not be intimidated and, in a way, tried to take the offensive.
15,000 Palestinians, children killed in their home. Stop it.
Come on, you'll be all over.
What does it feel to
you'll
be going?
You'll be everywhere.
What does it feel to be
Come
going
on,
in?
Girl, get your face in.
What does it feel to be going into a dinner with all of these war criminals?
Babcock, wow. I got two points of view on this thing.
Okay.
One is that, you know, Caitlyn Jenner, as far as I can see, what she came out against is Hamas.
Right.
And she said they were terrorists, they were thugs.
Right.
They massacred Israelis. I don't know how you argue that
point. No, it's all true.
But there is another side to that, which is there is a terrible thing going on right now in Gaza with tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians being killed.
Right. There's a humanitarian crisis. That's undeniable. If you read what she's wrote, she calls these people, though, Hamas sympathizers. And I think that's a very important distinction.
Well, and there is an element in the crowd, and I am not saying it's everybody, but there is an element in that crowd that is solidly behind Hamas.
Oh, you've heard some of the stuff at the universities over the last couple
From
of weeks.
From the river to the
sea.
Oh,
yeah, not one time, not 10, not 100, 10,000, whatever they said. I mean, truly horrific stuff. I'm surprised, Harvey, that she was walking through the crowd like she was. I think a lot of people would be intimidated in that type of situation.
She is the opposite of intimidated. But I do want to say, I mean, there are a lot of people in that crowd who are demonstrating not to support Hamas,
right,
but because of all the people being killed, the Palestinians being killed in Gaza. So those are two very separate things. I never heard her speak out, you know, although maybe she has, but I couldn't find it, saying that, Netanyahu, you know, go in there, bomb.
No, I haven't
heard
like that.
But if they're attacking her for attacking Hamas, well, she has one ally for sure, and that would be Bill Maher.
Genocide, by the way, is when you want to wipe out an entire people. That's the stated goal of Hamas. That's what From the River to the Sea means. Hamas would do that to Israel, but can't. Israel could do that to them, but doesn't.
I think it's an important point that Bill Maher is raising here. I mean, he's asking, in this moral landscape that we're looking at these two opposing sides, who are the bedfellows that you're sleeping with? And he's saying, if you align yourself with that side, they are not pro-LGBTQ like Israel. They are not sort of a democracy. And he's saying, just think about that when you go out to these protests.
Or pro-women or, you know, freedom of speech. I mean,
you see some of these protesters, you say, hey, you'd find out real quick if you were over there. Hamas would not like you.
And I don't know how you argue that point.
I think it's important to mention that regardless of what's happening in Israel and Gaza, that it's still a genocide. And whoever is fighting back against Israel is a product of what's been happening there for decades ahead of time. And it's easy to sit at a desk on Bill's show and repeat the words that your writers have written for you to applause, really, without anybody seeing anything fighting back against you there. What we should all be doing is focusing on trying to end any conflict we can end. I don't see what Caitlyn Jenner gets out of going into a protest that's about calling for a ceasefire. That's what the majority of the sign said. And then trying to say that they're supporting terrorists. It's a bit of a...
Well, that's a fair point. And I think you're right. There are two things going on. One is what is going on in Gaza right now with Palestinians.
Right.
The other is Hamas is simply a terrorist, horrible operation, right, that's trying to destroy a people. Okay, we are going to take a break. When we come back, Jerry Seinfeld. This is a day. So he's gone after what he calls the extreme left. He says they have ruined comedy.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear. Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome back to TMZ Live. Harvey and Babcock here. Charles is back tomorrow. Is he skiing?
No. Baseball game.
Oh, baseball game.
Yankee game. Good luck. Charles, a good luck charm. The Yankees. I told him he's got to stay.
That's right. I forgot about that. Okay. So Jerry Seinfeld has come out, speaking of baseball, swinging. Yeah. But not against a team. He is swinging against the, as what he says, the extreme left, a.k.a. progressives.
I'm interested.
And he is saying that they have just butchered comedy. Here is his argument.
It used to be you would go home at the end of the day, most people would go, oh, Cheers is on, oh, MASH is on, oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on, All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy. They move the gates, like in skiing.
Yeah.
Culture, the gates are moving. Your job is to be agile and clever enough that wherever they put the gates, I'm going to make the gate.
So on Jerry's 70th birthday, which is today, by the way, so happy birthday to Jerry, let me be the first to say that he's right. I mean, more or less, in big picture, he's 100% right. There is really no good TV comedy these days. You see a lot of drama, you see Succession, you see HBO cranking out a ton of stuff, Netflix cranking out a ton of stuff, but when it comes to just original sitcoms or original comedy shows, far and few between, and I think what he's saying is the reason for that is because of these committees, these, you know, the decision makers in Hollywood that basically look at comedy, which I think is one of the more like polarizing genres, if you will, because it can offend so many different people, especially with your sentiments and modern day sensibilities, etc. And more or less, I think he's correct, because in the 90s, in his heyday, you could say some things, you could make some jokes and people would laugh. And even if it was a little edgy, it would still fly. In this day and age, it sounds like he's kind of railing against that. And it's interesting because we've seen a lot of comics, especially from like his time, also kind of come out and take the same position. And now here's Jerry, one of the biggest voices in comedy, saying the same thing.
You know, Fabian, I so agree with you. I just remember back in the time frame you're talking about, I mean, look, I remember people telling all sorts of gay jokes in stand-up, mm-hmm. but also even on television, they would make the jokes. And I remember just thinking, you know, that doesn't automatically mean they're homophobic. And, you know, this is just comedy. And what people do is they talk about experiences they've had, other people they know. And it never offended me. Now it's a buzzkill.
That's right. It would force conversations. It'd be, you'd go to the water cooler the following Monday and talk about these things, and it would get a conversation going. And now it seems like a lot of that is sort of tamped down. And to his point, there's a lot of people who get their hands on material, they rework it, reshape it, and finally when it gets spit out on the other end, then that's when they finally say, this is appropriate to air on TV, and it's usually watered down, and it's just not as good.
Yeah.
I can hear people yelling at their TVs, Dave Chappelle, but he is the exception. And he went through something
as well.
Boy.
But, you know, the thing that strikes me about this, and it doesn't relate so much to comedy, it's Jerry talking about, as he put it, the extreme left. When people say that, that doesn't make them MAGA Republicans.
No.
And I think a lot of people just automatically go there and say, well, that means he's a Trumper.
Right.
It doesn't.
Right.
I mean, and look, I'm so sorry for quoting maybe too much, but I love Bill Maher because Bill Maher, I feel, is kind of in my camp. I'm an old-line liberal.
Right.
I am an old-line liberal, and so is he.
Right.
And what he's saying is that the extreme left is this fringe group, maybe 10, 15%.
Yep.
And you have an extreme right. I don't know how big that is.
Right.
But they're the ones with the megaphones right now.
They've got outsized power, for sure.
And if you say, I disagree with them, or they're ruining comedy, or they're ruining politics, or whatever, that doesn't make you a MAGA Republican. Do you know what I mean? It just does.
It's not black or white.
My name is Pablo Prince from Los Angeles, California. And honestly, I disagree with Jerry. I've had personal beef with Jerry since he turned down Kesha's red carpet hug. His body, his rules. But it's Kesha, girl. Okay? So I feel like anytime you hear, it's not as funny nowadays, be funnier. Because there are great shows on TV. And I don't know who's going to tell Jerry about streaming. But all the great shows from the past are available on streaming. And network TV, too. You got Abbott Elementary, you got even some shows from his era. Turns out the Conners never needed Roseanne. So maybe we should think about a Seinfeld reboot without Seinfeld. Because I feel like if you're good, you can be funny.
But he's saying that there are committees now at these networks because they're so scared that they water it down.
Water what down, though? It probably wasn't that funny. I want to know what he wants to say. Say it, and let's see if it's funny. Because when it's funny, it's funny. A lot of comics and allegedly, funny people just want to say something offensive. And I believe that comedy is about punching up. I believe that it's about disturbing the comfortable and comforting the disturbed. And if you can't do that, then maybe you have to up your game.
So all you can do is, but what you're saying is all you can do is punch up. It makes it sound like if you do anything other than that, you're a bully or you're a phobe of some sort. That isn't necessarily the case.
I agree with you. I don't think that it's the case, but I think that, I don't know, complaining about that just feels like a dog whistle to me. It feels like it's not that bad. There are really funny people who are able to, we can still say gay jokes. There's still plenty of gay jokes out there.
Right.
And they're funny.
I'm with you on that. Okay, we got to do this real quick. So Quavo performed in Bridgeport, Connecticut over the weekend. Yeah. He performed to a group that could have been at a dinner table because almost no one showed up. I mean, look at this.
This guy is one of the biggest stars in all of rap music, period. There was nobody there.
I mean, almost nobody there.
Do you want me to tell you the conspiracy theory?
Oh, I know this theory. Go for it.
All right, so Quavo is in a beef with Chris Brown. There is a theory, Harvey, that perhaps Chris Brown might have bought some tickets?
All the tickets.
Of course, there's no truth to Chris Brown buying any tickets, but that's the downside when you're losing in a rap beef. You know, your opponent gets all the credit.
But Trent, how is there nobody there? I mean, yeah, this guy he's part of the biggest group in the world at one time.
How would that happen?
Chris Brown called Quavo the weakest link, and he said his music is trash, and the people of Connecticut proved him right.
So you think he's just totally lost a fan base without Migos?
Hey, the Migos broke up, Takeoff, rest in peace. Offset's doing his thing. You know, Quavo needs to regroup. His last album wasn't received that well. And, you know, the people don't want to hear it. You know, Chris Brown is the king. He won this particular beef.
Hi there, Ivor from Toronto, Canada. I do not buy into conspiracy theories at all. Why would Chris Brown give somebody that he's having beef with actual money? I think the reality is that Chris Brown, if he did do this, he's the biggest supervillain on the planet.
Well, no, but I got to stop you. It's not that he's giving people money. It's that he was buying all the tickets so that there'd be empty seats.
To embarrass Quavo.
Right.
With the embarrassment, maybe that's the push behind it. But the reality is, why would you give your money to your enemy even to prove a point like that? I think the reality is that Quavo doesn't have that following. He doesn't have that energy. When he was part of Migos, amazing. But now as a standalone, he just doesn't have that push.
Okay. You know, there was a story from many years ago that 50 Cent had allegedly done that to Ja Rule when they were in their beef.
It's pretty
which
boss.
I think
it's a pretty boss
did.
Move, I gotta say. We told you about Kanye West earlier this month. He was at the Chateau Marmont with his wife, Bianca Censori, and he says that apparently Bianca told him that somebody kind of went up her dress or in some way assaulted her. And Kanye says he went and looked for the culprit. 5 minutes later, allegedly found him, punched him in the face. Turns out the guy he punched is a twin, and Kanye punched the wrong twin.
Whoops.
But everybody there said that the guy didn't do anything other than brush against her because it was crowded.
Right. We were told, like, up under the dress, Harvin, like, grabbed her waist and basically turned her around and tried to do something to her.
So what we're told, at least that the witnesses that talked to cops said, we never saw anything like that, and Kanye didn't see it. So then Kanye is now the subject of a criminal battery for punching not only a guy, but the wrong guy. and there's an update.
So police have been trying to get in contact with both Kanye and the Houston brothers, and while the brothers spoke with the cops on the night this incident happened, they've been reluctant to talk to cops since, and I think I know the reason why.
Why?
Just inferring here, you know, the Houston brothers own some of the biggest bars and clubs in Los Angeles. They're huge restaurateurs. It's not necessarily good for business if they're the people to take down Kanye. So say Kanye is allegedly in the wrong here. The juice isn't worth the squeeze here. Like, they don't want to be the people to go to the police, file a report. They'd rather just let bygones be bygones and walk away from all this.
That's the way Hollywood works, yep. Folks. That's the way Hollywood works.
Hi, this is Justin from Sherman Oaks, and first off, why would anyone go up to Kanye West's wife? I mean, let's be real. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to get invited to dinner? I mean, let's, yeah, like, stay clear.
Yeah, I mean, again, the witnesses said they didn't see anything like that.
Right.
So this case is just going to go away.
Ryan Gosling had, he had hearts fluttering over the weekend, Harvey. He made a surprise appearance, a surprise cameo at Universal in Los Angeles, Harvey. So he's got this movie, The Fall Guy, coming up. And they've got this show at Universal that's based off of the movie.
It's just like a temporary thing until.
Right, he's not going to, and don't think you're going to be
Ryan's
there.
Ryan's not right. Appearing every night.
No, just one time thing. This was really funny. He actually got on the mic and he sent a warning to the people in the show. Watch this.
Anytime I get set on fire or do anything cool, or anything cool really in parkour-y, that's been. We both, you know, have like leading man qualities, let's be honest. So if you ever start acting, I'm in trouble. So stick to your job, please.
Yeah, so the movie is essentially he's a Hollywood stuntman, and there's this whole crime syndicate going on, and he saves the day.
He does save the day.
I mean, the good thing here is the fact that he didn't do any stunts while he was there, because if something bad happened, he probably wouldn't have made it to the upcoming premiere.
Yes.
We don't want that. We can't have Ryan Gosling get hurt. Not at Universal.
National treasure, folks.
My name is Megan from Los Angeles. And in theory, what we're really watching is marketing. But when you add the name Ryan Gosling to it, we're watching a superhero harness his power of sexy and nice to bring people out to the box office. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, it is total marketing, and guess what? It works. What else do you guys want to talk about?
Hi, Emily from Los Angeles. Diddy and Aubrey O'Day have a long history. When he tried to appear like he was being a good guy and reassigned his portions of the publishing to Bad Boy artists, she said, I'm good. She knew she would be signing away her ability to speak out, and that is especially valuable now that Diddy is under fire from multiple fronts. She's also doing very well on OnlyFans and didn't need Diddy's pennies, as she called them.
True on all counts. Mm. And also, remember, what she was offered was $300.
Right.
One more.
This is Allison from Staten Island. And just this whole thing with Britney Spears, her press guy or something, I don't even know who he was, he said that basically she is not mentally doing well. And I feel like this is kind of a long time coming, just from her Instagram posts over the years, her captions, they've all just kind of not been right. And I think her representation just saying this kind of just, it's obvious. Like,
let me ask you something. How did you feel during the Free Britney movement?
Oh, I supported her 100%. I think
was it the right move?
Absolutely. Yes. Because I feel like it's her life at the end of the day, but also it's a very tough situation because you can see she's obviously not doing that well. So she should have some more guidance in her life, but it's very up in the air.
Not for me.
No, it's
and no shade to Britney at all. It's just this is protection.
Right.
I mean, her life is not better. It's worse than it was before. So I don't know,
man.
It's
very clear.
So Robin Thicke and his wife April Lovegeary decided to take a trip. And they took a trip to Egypt, and he performed in Egypt. That's cool. Not news. What is news is he performed at a wedding right by the pyramids. He's apparently a good friend of the groom. Now the question, did Robin Thicke do this for nothing, or did he make some loot off of this
Despite
thing?
The fact, Harvey, that they are good friends, I cannot imagine Robin Thicke doing that for free.
So just so you know the way this works, a lot of stars, and I mean, I'm talking big stars, Jennifer Lopez, lots of big stars, yeah. They make a lot of money going around the world performing at weddings and bar mitzvahs and all of these things with super wealthy people.
It's not necessarily all album sales. You get a lot of your money through events like that.
You can literally make $4 million singing two songs. That, I mean, when we're talking about all these billionaires that can drop money, I mean, it is the motherlode that we will see tomorrow.